Hello, everyone. Welcome to another issue of Comic Chronicle. I am your host, as always, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And I have a very special guest with me today. Some may say magical, but she is sweet. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Although I'm sure you say that to all your guests. I'm Alisa Quitney, and I am the author of Mystic You and a bunch of other comics and novels, including an upcoming YA called Cadaver and Queen. I also edit for Liminal Comics, and in another life, I was a staff editor at Vertigo. Before Vertigo was Vertigo.
Ooh, so you have a hefty record to say on your resume, like really good. What do you like more? Do you like editing or do you like writing more? Which one do you think is easier?
Like is such a strange word. I always say that when I'm editing, I feel like I am a much more intelligent person. I see connections. Mm-hmm. I can recognize patterns more quickly. I can diagnose, you know, opportunities right away. And when I'm writing, I am, you know, a very nearsighted person bumping around in a dark room.
Yeah.
I really do enjoy, and I don't call it writing to myself because writing comes with all this baggage that intimidates me.
Yeah.
I call it storytelling, and I do like telling stories.
Ooh, I like that. I like it. It has a little bit more, I don't know what would be the correct word for it, but a little bit more, I want to almost say pizzazz, but it sounds better than writing, storytelling. Yeah, I like that. That's a new name. There's no script writers anymore, folks, or writers. We're storytellers. I like
it. You know, it actually breaks down some of the barriers. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I teach writing. I taught for a year at a school for kids with dyslexia. Ooh. And I deliberately kept using storytelling because I wanted to talk about all the different ways to tell stories, including, you know, using visual storytelling, including oral, you know, stuff where you're not writing it all down. And it was, you know, meant to be empowering, and I think it was. But
you
also
hope.
When I'm collaborating with artists and we both consider ourselves storytellers and we talk, it you know, lets the artist feel like he or she can make a suggestion or have a thought about the pitch or the story, and it makes me feel like I can, you know, say, give feedback back and forth, and so it kind of breaks down some of those collaborative barriers.
That's beautiful. Thank you for doing that work, by the way. That's it's incredible, to say the least. Here, I mean, sometimes I talk to people and they do stuff for the community, but that's some good work, to say the least. Here, and I can't say much more about it because it's mad kudos to you.
Oh, well, I have to say that I don't see a big distinction between teaching and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always taking classes, and I'm teaching when I have opportunities. But it's kind of I don't have that, you know, sage on a stage. I am imparting my wisdom. It's more, you know, let's create opportunities to, you know, mess around with the creative work and you know, see what we find out.
Yeah, which is beautiful because the creative world can lead in so many directions, as you and I know. Which kind of leads me to this question. How do you get to work for DC? Like, what was kind of the road to be able to be like, I work at DC Comics?
Well, I guess my first question is which time? Because I have had more than one life.
That's true.
You know, there's the working at DC in the 90s, and then there's the working at DC, you know, that's been through the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so which life are you wanting to know about first?
Well, it sounds like I'm talking to a spy, not even going to lie. Like, which life is it? Like, choose wisely. I'll send someone over to snipe you in the head in case you choose the other one, because that's classified. Like, no one can remember the 90s.
Yeah, there's truth.
Yeah, no one wants to, because we all look back and we're like, I had neon orange hair.
I'm sorry, everything from the 90s has come back. Like, I'm surrounded by college kids, and they are all wearing... The only thing that hasn't come back is that sort of matte, poop-colored lipstick big thing for a while, but
it has
to come back.
It has. I've seen it. I've seen it on some people. I work in the public a lot at a zoo, and I've seen some people wear that lipstick, so I think it's about 100% of the 90s has come back then.
Yes. Okay. So, and I'm also convinced that, you know, there's window dressing that changes and obviously political things that change.
Oh, yeah.
But the essential, you know, truths of being, you know, young and trying on identities, that stuff really is incredibly recognizable from decade to decade to decade.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to your question, do you want to hear about, like, the first time I got involved with DC or the more recent time?
Let's hear about the first time, because it can lead us back from the 90s and then kind of, like, to present time a little bit.
All right. So we cast our minds back to the decade of poop-colored lipstick and 70s revival.
Yes.
And I'm completing my MFA at Columbia and realizing that I really have no practical skills, and I'm not sure how I'm going to earn enough money to get out of my mother's apartment.
Mm.
I'd gotten out of my mother's apartment. I was back in my mother's apartment. It was, you know, there was that 20s thing.
Yeah.
And so everyone I knew who was in the fiction writing program, the thing you did was you applied to get a job at a, you know, a big five publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that too. I was, you know, interviewing, but at the same time, I was one of not so many people in the program who also had genre leanings, and I loved comic books, and I read comic books, and also romance novels, as well as literature and, you know, horror and all these other things. So I decided, you know what, I had no idea how comic books were edited, or unlike all of these people who had elaborate plans to work in comic books, I didn't even think that hard about how the sausage was made. I just loved comics, and I on and off, you know, read comics from the time I was a kid and through graduate school. So I sent out a resume to DC and to Marvel, and they were both based in New York at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel never got back to me.
Those
but
fools.
DC did. Yeah, but DC did, and I was so excited. At that point, by the way, I was trying to convince all kinds of jobs that I didn't want. I remember, like, copy editing tax law in a closet, and I was saying, like, yeah, I think this job would be really good for me because of the whole wanting to move out of my mom's.
Yeah.
Not that there was anything wrong with living at my mom is a wonderful person. I just, you know, wanted to try the adulting thing. So, it's a blizzard. It's one of those, you know, New York City blizzards where no sane person continues to try and get into Midtown.
Yes.
But I was inspired, and so I get into to Midtown, and there's nobody basically at the DC offices. I think one editor was there, Kevin Dooley, and he looked at me and he said, you should just go home. No interview is happening today.
Oh, wow.
But I came back. I had a second interview, and I was interviewed by Dick Giordano, who was then the vice president. And I remember that he was, you know, he asked me, which are your favorite DC comics? And the truth was, my favorite DC comics were not being published, as far as I knew. My favorite DC comics were House of Mystery and House of Secrets, which I really, really loved as a kid. And I had not prepared sufficiently. I hadn't done all that due diligence so I could fake my way through the question. And I just told the truth. And he said, oh, my God, we've got the perfect opening for you. We've got this editor, Karen Berger, and she's doing all, you know, these weird horror things with all these British creators. And so I was brought back to have my interview with Karen Berger. I'm sorry, this is a very long story.
No, you're good. I'm like, it's a very intriguing story. That's why, like, I'm just sitting here like, oh, my God. And all the listeners will probably agree with me on that.
Well, I mean, the problem with this story is it's not an easy thing to duplicate. It's not like, and if you just follow these easy steps, you know, you will get a job in comics. Actually, if you follow the steps that I took, what you probably will get now is in a lot of legal trouble.
Oh, Jesus.
Because what happened is Karen was looking for an assistant. Mm-hmm. Her assistant, Art Young, was leaving to go open up I think he was working in I'm forgetting the timing, if he was going to go work in London or if he was living in London. Anyway, he was going to London, and I thought the interview was going really well to begin with. Karen was looking interested in what I had to say, and we went out to lunch, and everything seemed to be going well. And then just towards the end, she began to frown at me in a way where she looked really just as if I was giving her pain. And I said, "Do you have a headache?" And she said, "Yes, I do." And now she was pregnant at the time. Ooh. And I said, "Oh, you're pregnant." And I just reached across her desk and started rubbing her temples.
I think most likely you'd have security taser you these days, especially these days in 2018, if you tried that.
This is. I just don't recommend this at all. No. I think you'd need probably a rider to your contract if you were going to do this. But it worked out, and I remember thinking as I'm rubbing her temples, well, I think I've either got the job or I really don't have the job at this point. So that was the first time around that that I was hired at DC. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would say is at that time, I could say that I wanted to write as well as edit, and that was considered perfectly normal and acceptable. And so I was able to, you know, to write as well while I was on staff.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's phase one.
Phase one of the master plan to be the top notch at DC Comics.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear though that I had no master plan. I was really lucky in that I got mentored by Karen. I got mentored by Paul Levitz. Denny O'Neill, who I didn't work directly with, was so fantastic. He actually bought me the Robert McKee book on storytelling, story structure. And there were a lot of people there who helped me. Tom Pyre, who was, can't remember if he was associate or full editor there, and Stuart Moore. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of people sort of showing me the ropes and explaining things to me. And as I remained there, I began to talk a lot more to people like Mark Chiarello and Richard Bruning, and find out more about the art side of things as well. But mm-hmm. I still consider myself to be learning, because there's just a vast amount of things I don't know or understand about comic book writing and comic book art. But I keep learning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, I think, a kind of a good thing to know. Like, it's one thing about life. You will always be learning, no matter what profession you're in, no matter what you do. And just in life in general, I think you will always be learning, and you got to accept that fact. And you got to be willing to always learn, because otherwise, if you're stuck in the old ways, you're going to go like the dinosaurs.
This is so true. When you're starting out, I think in your 20s, the big learning is that somebody who looks like your grandparent actually can really know incredibly of-the-moment stuff that you need to learn.
Yes.
And as you get older, you have to learn that people who look like they could be your children have things that they can teach you, and you need to learn from them.
And they could also be your bosses, from what I've been told by some people, too, is like, people are like 22, and I'm 45, and they're my boss.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nuts. That is insane. So DC brought you back, and many years later, or a few years later, and then you get to write. I read the book a couple days ago, Mystic You. We'll kind of go dive right into that. Beautiful, by the way. Beautiful book.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, if that book too has sort of an interesting genesis, because Marie Javens is, to a large extent, the reason that I'm writing in comics again. And she had been working initially temporarily at DC when they were moving offices from New York to California. And I had known her through Stuart Moore. And I feel like nobody talks about this that much, but it really helps to network with other creators and you never know just when something like that will be helpful, because I had known Marie mainly as just another freelance editor and writer, doing the same sort of stuff that I was doing. And when Convergence happened, she reached out to me and asked if I wanted to start writing. And so I pitched for it, and I don't know if other people have talked about this with you, but you know, a lot of being a freelancer is doing a lot of work on spec, which is pitching. And so you come up with the character that you would like to do something with and the best idea that you can come up with for them. And then, you know, you get feedback and people might ask you to tweak it a bit and you send it back. And if they're intrigued, they ask you to do more and flesh it out. And right, so there's all of this back and forth. Wow. Unless, of course, I guess you're a huge name. But I wanted to mention that process because otherwise it just sounds like I was strolling around and they asked me if I would be in a movie. And really it's more like, I got a chance to audition and then come back and audition again. And he said, that'd be really good. Can you, you know, change this, that, and the other thing about yourself? And you were like, of course I can. And anyway, So there was all of this pitching going on. And for the first time in a long time, I got invited to the DC party, which is very exciting. And I found myself talking to Bobby Chase, who also is, you know, the other part of this story for me. And Bobby Chase is wonderful. And I think I might have had a little bit too much to drink because I didn't understand what Bobby was doing at the company. Uh-huh. And so I was sure that she was not anyone that I should schmooze for work. And so instead, I was just sort of hanging out with her and, you know, I don't know, drunkenly talking cocktail party talk.
Wow.
Anyway, as I say, nobody should probably try to imitate my career path because it could go very wrong.
Yeah.
But it went right. And so Bobby came back to me and asked me if I would pitch for some new work. And that was, I guess, about 3 years ago. And that was the first time around that Mystic U almost happened.
It almost happened 3 years ago? Get out. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it almost happened. It almost happened with Alain Morissette was the artist who was initially attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned his name because it was so funny through this whole chaotic process. He and I became really good friends, and we ended up, we basically have like freelancer sanity calls once every 2 weeks where we just talk about how the work is going. And we started doing that 3 years ago, and wow, we just never stopped.
That's beautiful. That's like, we got to make sure you're okay, you're sane, you're still alive. How many packs of ramen are you packed with today? Are you okay?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, freelancing is such a strange lifestyle because it, and also, I mean, I find that a lot of times when I listen to people, especially people my age, mm-hmm, talking about working in the industry, they sound so confident and so certain of like how I got to this place. And I have no idea how I got to this place or where I'm going to be, you know, next year. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely don't feel this huge amount of confidence. And I love talking to other people who are, you know, feeling like they're still trying to figure it out. But anyway, so Mystic U was originally headed in a different direction.
Okay.
And it was, you know, I was sort of encouraged to think of it more along a Vertigo creator-owned kind of approach. And for various reasons, that iteration did not happen. And at the time, it felt like a real setback to me. And now I know that it really is good that it happened that way, mm-hmm, because it didn't go away for those 3 years. It had time to sort of grow inside of me, and the themes were what stayed the same. I knew I wanted to write about that whole experience of going into college, thinking, mm-hmm, that you've got a unique and special talent or voice or ability. And then you get to college and you're sucking at the very things that you thought you were good at formed your high school identity.
You get smacked right across the face when you get to college. It's that dreaded like first week of the smacked real hard and you're like, oh God, no.
Yes, exactly. And that, you know, it's, I think also, depending on your high school and your crowd,
yeah,
you you know, you get an identity based on, you know, what the other people are around you. So maybe you were the best at philosophy, or you were the biology person. Mm-hmm. And then you get to college, and you suddenly are surrounded by other people who are basically doing the same thing. And it's daunting in a way that I think there's just so much attention paid to getting into college and not so much attention paid to the experience of figuring it out.
Yeah, surviving it too, because it can be survival sometimes. It really can. I've noticed that recently too. I mean, I got a younger sister and such. That is like, they don't really tell you, well, once you walk in the doors, what happens? Oh, no, don't worry about that. Just worry about getting in. It's like, well, some people are going in, walking through those doors, and then coming back out for like 6 years. You got to know what to do. Like, it's insanity sometimes. It really is.
Yeah, and it doesn't actually seem that different to me. I've got my son is just out of college, and my daughter's halfway through. And then having been teaching high school and teaching teenagers, I've just been very surrounded by people going through this process. Also, I do weird like theater things, and so that breaks down some of the age barriers. So when I do meet and talk to people in their teens and 20s, there's often not that barrier of like, oh, this is a friend of your parents, you know. But it's sort of more that hairy behind stage thing, and you just get a different
vibe.
You know, vision of what's going on.
Yeah.
And the main thing that I felt was that college had not changed. It had changed in that I think I got all the way through college without using a computer, which is crazy to think about.
Wow, that's insanity. Did you use a voice, backwards words? Is that what happened here? Is that how you did this?
If only. No, I mean, it was just a different time in terms of, I mean, I think even in graduate school, people were still using typewriters.
Wow.
As well. I mean, computers as well. But yeah, no, I'm old. What can I say? But the sexual dynamics and the temptations and the trying to balance out experimentation and sort of performing yourself as well as learning and trying to figure out enough of a structure so that you don't implode, all of that really kind of stays the same. I mean, it's different for everyone, but I don't think that my experience was very different from the experience of today.
Yes, and I 100% probably agree on that. And it plays so well into the book. Like, that's why I was honored to be able to talk to you today, because it plays so well. And from what you've been telling me, yes, I can completely – I saw it in there when I read it. And it kind of leads me to this, is you got to do this with an extremely popular, like, Enchantress, a Zatanna. Like, you got to have a toy box of, like, my thing is I've always liked the magic side of DC Universe, always have. And you got the toy box. I'm seeing all these different characters and the kind of this new way of looking at them and thinking of them. I mean, Felix Faust's son, like, insane. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. Like, the toy box that you were able to do with this, with all these different characters, is insane. Was it really a happy moment when you got the chance to work with them? Or was it kind of like figuring out who some of these characters are, trying to do this, work with them, figuring out, doing a bunch of background on them? Or was it like, I know these characters. Yes.
Let me put it like this.
Oh.
I was at Baltimore Comic Con, and Dan DiDio came over and was sitting at, you know, my little table. Uh-huh. And I was still, I mean, at that point, Mystic U was all ready to go. The first, you know, it was just about ready. And I was still waiting for the penny to drop and Dan to say, oh, you can't use Zatanna. You know, that's not happening. And, you know, quite the opposite, by the way. He was so supportive of the book, and he was, he actually kind of made it sound like it was part of the exciting new YA wave that's happening with DC, which I was like, yes, yes, say that more, Dan. but yeah, when I got the possibility, when I started talking with my editor, Alex Antone, about, by the way, I always think of him as like one of the Arcane family, which is very weird. I feel like his name sounds like a DC character to me.
Well,
but
Well, I guess you could take that as, from what the business is, I think that's pretty much a compliment these days. It really is, like, definitely a compliment. And be like, well, if he's got his own DC name, like, what can he do? And just, like, do this long, send it to him in, like, a text or an email or something like that. Like, since I'd say you got a DC name, I was bored, so I made you an entire storyline, and here's what you got for powers and such.
I should do that.
Yeah.
So Alex started to talk to me, and also Brittany Holzer, who is now an associate. I think she was probably an assistant when she was starting out, but both of them were, first of all, very smart and savvy. They've been an incredible editorial team. And we started to talk, and they said, you could have Zatanna. And I was like, I can have Zatanna as a student or as a professor? And they said, oh, as a student. You can have her as a student.
Oh, and hard drop.
I kept saying, are you sure? Are you absolutely sure when you say that I can have her as a professor, as a student, do you mean like, and then you're going to realize that you actually meant professor? Because it just seemed really, really impossible to me that they were going to let me do that. In my first go around, there was sort of like, well, you can use Tim Hunter, but he has to be, you know, this age, and it has to, or you could use this. And there were a lot of, you know, I think there was much more nervousness about how everything was going to fit in with everything else.
Yeah.
And this time there were all of these characters that were made available to me. And I still just felt really astonished by it.
Mm.
People have asked me, you know, well, how does this fit in with the continuity? And does it fit in with the continuity? And I don't know how to put this, but my editorial background always gave me a sort of double-sided feeling about continuity. On the one hand, I don't want to try and get too hamstrung by it. I don't want to feel too constrained to try and say, well, this would happen right, you know, between here and there, and it's this continuity line, because I think part of it is that if I think too much about the whole history of some of these characters, I begin to not see them as my own characters, and I don't feel like I can take chances with them.
And I hear that a lot, and when I write my own stuff and that gets put out there and such, is continuity is, it can be a blessing but also a curse, because it can restrict you but also give you good material, but also restrict the material you want to give, and it can really take away from what the story you're trying to tell. I agree 100% with that. 100%.
Exactly. But the way that it can give you something is if you, you know, if you sort of pick and choose, and often I try not to go in and like massively reread or read everything about a character. I will sort of do some sleuthing, and then I'll pick the stuff out, and I try not to know too much, because then I am easily intimidated, to be honest. Writing is really good and the story is excellent. It can take me a longer time to digest. So with Zatanna, you know, I also, with Zatanna and Enchantress and the others, I wanted to acknowledge their history, and I wanted to create little, you know, yummy Easter eggs, or whatever the Jewish equivalent, since I'm Jewish, I don't know, afikomenlets around.
Oh, now that I've never even heard of that before. You're teaching me some new things.
Well, the afikomen is like a little last bit of matzah that you hide and you have to find, and you redeem it at the end of the Seder. So I guess it's like little afikomenlets. Anyway.
Yeah.
but I wanted to leave those around so that people who had been, you know, reading the characters for a long time and had been fans would feel rewarded and would feel, you know, understood. And I just was thinking about what I would want, how much continuity acknowledgement I would need. You know, why is Zatanna all of a sudden 18? That's a little weird. And so I felt that, you know, for myself, if I were going to a bookstore and I was picking up the book, I would need some nod to, okay, how come she's young all of a sudden? And then I would let go.
Yes.
You know, and I you know, I mean, I know obviously there's that wonderful classic Hellblazer scene where her father, who is it? You know, it's Sargon the Sorcerer who dies in that. There's like a famous seance. I think it's in Hellblazer. I think it's the original, or one of the original, one of the older Sargon the Sorcerers.
I think so, I think. And if not, we're going to hear about it from the listeners. Let me tell you, they're going to be like, you fools, it was this. And all we'll know.
My ignorance is so boundless. I if you are listening to this, and I apologize for not, I think I did look all this up before I started writing, but then I write other things, and I'm constantly researching, and things drop out of my head almost as quickly as I put them in.
It is tough. It's incredibly tough. But we are kind of going to the time limit. So we kind of just want to let you know right now, because I know we only have a little bit of time here, so I don't want to take it too long. I don't want to take it from anything too long.
Well, I'll go a little longer if it's okay, just to sort of wrap up about Zatanna.
Of course, yes.
The thing that I felt with Zatanna and with all of them is that I wanted them to feel like college people that I could relate to, mm-hmm. and that I, you know, and obviously some of them, Sins of Gopal, which is a band which is mentioned, was actually a band from my college days.
That's a nice throwback right there. That's very nice.
So, yeah, you know, Wesleyan. But but a lot of it is just also taken from more recent stuff. Oh, and there were two things I really wanted to say. So in terms of Zatanna, I wanted to sort of think about her as somebody who had this showbiz background, who had been successful, and yet who was also really new to being in this kind of a social situation. I felt that she had been isolated by her, you know, upbringing with her father doing the shows. Mm-hmm. And that's a very particular moment in her life of like, this is the biggest transition. So, and I also kind of felt, given her later thing with John Constantine, that she probably has a bit of a bad boy thing going.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Especially with John. Oh, yes. I think all listeners and readers and people who know the character, because, I love Zatanna, and, very much so. She's a wonderful female character that deserves more of a spotlight, and I thank you so much for giving her this spotlight, too.
Oh, thank you. Well, so I wanted, for me, it was a lot of fun doing all of that, playing around. And also, I mean, there's a character, there are a lot of little nods to the fact that I loved House of Mystery and House of Secrets. Yeah. And another DC title, which I won't name because it in itself is an Easter egg or an Afikomenlet.
Ooh.
Are lots of little nerdy things in there.
Oh yeah, there is. And I kind of, when I was reading, I was like looking and I'm like, oh my god, there's this, like, it was the House of Mystery, they're like, oh, this is skinnier than I thought or something like that, and I'm like, oh my god. And there is a lot of Easter eggs, and I love Easter eggs. They're a wonderful thing, because if you're a fan, you're like, I'm being respected for being a fan, and if not, people are like, what is that? And then it allows you to explore a little bit more. So I think Easter eggs, you need to have more in comics and mediums alone, to say the least.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I think that there's, part of me just always wants a good story.
Yes.
And part of me feels like a particular thrill when I see something that I loved as a kid, and it's, you know, and it's given its moment. And you don't, you know, the story has to work without those things, mm-hmm. and yet they are greatly delicious. I also just need to say something about my team, mm-hmm. because I Mike Norton has been so amazing to work with. And he was just finishing up some of the last pages, and he said, what are y'all going to do with the Mike Norton-shaped hole in your hearts? And I said, I really hope to fill it with another Mike Norton-shaped project. Ooh. And, but, I mean, all of us, Jordi Belair has been doing the color, Julian Tedesco has been doing the amazing covers. But it's gorgeous. Just been a really, like, I don't know, I haven't worked on another book where I felt like everyone was just so into it together. It felt like we were, like, doing a really good jam session.
And, oh, it's the best.
Was, lots of little, like, whenever Jordy shows some of the colors, like, we all have these little, like, funny in-jokes going around through the emails, and so I'm feeling just a little sad that it's coming to an end.
Aww.
Oh, and the other thing, let's see. So in its earlier 3 years ago iteration, I worked with a wonderful editor named Amadeo Turturro. I'm going to mention that name because there's a little Afikoman in lit with his name.
Ooh.
And and oh God, what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh yes, Naked Sebastian Faust. If the opposite of an Easter egg is when you're like poking a little at some of the things you wish hadn't been in all the comics you used to read as a kid, what would the name for that be? The opposite of an Easter egg.
Oh, you are testing my writing knowledge today.
There may not be a word for this. I think we may need to invent one.
Oh, if we invent one? Oh, okay. How about this? If we invent one and we get at least $1 million or 2 million, I'll split half of it with you.
Perfect. Okay, so we need to invent the opposite of an Easter egg when you're like an imploding Easter, you know, the thing where you're trying to call attention to something you wish was different. I don't know, like trick candle. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, I don't know either. This is going to be. Oh, yeah.
We are looking for suggestions for the opposite of an Easter egg, or an Afikoman lid if you're Jewish.
Yeah.
So in a lot of the older comics that I used to read and love, and I also read heavy metal and stuff for the art, and ooh, I found that there were always naked women next to naked women. Oh, she's a robot, but she's looks like a woman, and she's naked, and the men are all dressed.
Yes, agree. I think I remember one, and it was a top half was werewolf, and the bottom half was a naked woman as well. And I'm like, this is interesting. And I think I was like 13 when I saw it. I'm like, well, I don't know how that's interesting to some guys, but okay. I like werewolves, but not that much.
Yes. So I felt like I wanted, there were a couple of things that I wanted to do in Mystic U that would sort of reverse that polarity.
Yeah.
So one of the things was the whole Dr. Occult Rose Psychic dynamic. Because how come he's always Dr. Occult and she's just Rose and he seems to always be the default personality?
Yeah.
And one of the other things that I wanted to do was I wanted Zatanna to always be dressed in a way that was attractive, but not cheesecake.
Yes.
And I kept taking off, this sounds wrong, because I kept having scenes in which Faust was the one who was beefcake.
So
he was like, he's in the shower, he's got his shirt off, he doesn't sleep in anything, and Mike Norton, who's so wonderful, just like threw in an extra shirtless scene, I believe, and I felt like he really got the whole thing.
Yeah, he paid attention to me, he actually listened.
And he just really created this world. I mean, I feel like I created a lot, but it didn't come to life until, you know, Mike created it on the page, and so he's been so much, you know, a part of this. So yeah.
So big shout out to Mike. Kudos. Kudos to Mike, because big shout out to him. Mike, if you're listening, hopefully you are. I mean, hopefully, say here, we'll give you like, hey, here, listen to this. We gave you a big little shout out thing. So special shout out to you, Mike.
Yes. And the fact that he loves pugs and, you know, has got the whole battle pug. I mean, that's just gravy on top of his wonderfulness.
That's a cherry on top. Oh, that's perfect. Wow. Wow. But thank you so much for coming on to the show. It has been an absolute pleasure today. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, thank you. For me, too. I really enjoyed this. And hope I'll get a chance to do it again sometime.
Of course. You're always invited back. If you create anything else you want to come on and talk in the show, definitely we'll have you. I got plenty of other shows we can have you on if it's something else. Who knows? But where can people follow you at? Like, what would be so they can keep track of what you do and get kind of know more a little bit what you do, too?
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter and I think, what am I? I'm at A Quitney, and Quitney is Kwitney.
Yes.
There's no Q's in there. And I think I'm like the only Elisa Quitney around, so it's you can just find that. And I have, I mean, the I think the second issue of Mystic U should be coming out January 31st. Ooh. And also, I have a can I plug my book?
Yes. Oh, yes. Plug away. I'd like to really plug away.
Thank you. So I have a young adult novel called Cadaver and Queen that's coming out February 27th. It's sort of like my, I call it my feminist Frankenstein meets Grey's Anatomy. It's this weird Victorian medical school that makes biomechanicals, and my heroine is the only female medical student at the school, Elizabeth Lavenza. And so it's funny because I've done lots of other things, but right now I've got two school projects that are going on right now. Hmm. And I've got Young Monsters in Love. I've got a story in Young Monsters in Love with the artist Stephanie Hans. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And that's going to be coming out, I think, February 10th.
Well, folks, you got a lot of work to check out with Liza. You really do. She's doing wonderful work. Before I let you go, I need to know, how many issues do you think, how many issues are we looking at for Mystic U?
So this first go-round with Mystic U is going to be the three double-sized issues, and this storyline then, you know, comes to a close. But I mean, not only do I want to do more Mystic U, I think the whole team does. So I'm crossing fingers that if it sells well enough, that, you know, maybe they will look for more. And I also, Bobby Chase and Marie, I'm talking with them about the possibility of another project up ahead, mm-hmm. which I would be very excited to do, but I can't talk about it yet. So just send, like, good, positive, you know, may your pitch go well kind of vibes.
Yes. Oh, yes. Blessings to you, whichever, like, crossing fingers, because pitching can be tough, to say the least. They really can. I'm not talking MLB pitching, folks. I'm talking pitching other people. Well, that sounds the same. Pitching the people about projects, to say the least. Incredibly difficult. Sometimes I think it'd be easier
to
throw a baseball.
It's just like dating, except, you know, instead of, I guess, getting a romantic partner, you get a job.
Yes, an old school dating, not swipe left or swipe right. It's old school dating, but boys and girls. It really is.
Yes, personal and humiliating.
Oh, that's life in college. All right, well, thank you for coming on. And like I said, you're invited anytime else. It really has been fun here.
Thank you, for me too. And anyway, I hope you'll send me a link and tell me all about your zombie part in the movie.
Oh, I definitely will. I definitely will. And folks, as much as I can say about for that one.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. No one has any idea because I'm making a zombie film right now, so nobody has any idea. Shh. The listeners, you get an exclusive sneak peek if you're listening to this.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. Absolutely 100% fine. I'll talk to you later, okay?
All right. Bye.
Bye. Eliza Quitney, folks. Wonderful, wonderful woman. She really is. Make sure you check out Mystic U by DC Comics. Make sure you check out her book, too. And make sure you check out all of her work. Go follow her, folks. You really should. So thank you for coming on once again and listening to Comic Chronicle on the FanCorp Network. And as always, you can find the FanCorp Network on @RealFanCorp on Twitter and Instagram, and FanCorp Network on Facebook and YouTube. So go ahead, make sure you check it out, folks. Make sure you follow her, and make sure you follow everything going on with the FanCorp Network and all our shows and upcoming movies. Thank you all, and stay classy, Mystic U.